Welcome to A New Lens with Common Good Capital, where we talk with investors, RIAs, fund managers, and philanthropists about their experience within different impact investing themes, as well as explore the power of stewardship and capital. I'm your host, Jeff Schaefer. I'm CEO of Common Good Capital. I'm here with Paulina Standard. Paulina is a CFA chartered holder and is the head of impact for CI Private Wealth. CI Private Wealth is a nationwide investment advisor with roughly $140 billion of assets under management. Prior to that, she was with Align Impact and Northern Trust. Thank you very much for joining us today, Paulina.
Awesome. Thanks for having me.
Just for transparency. I think we've known each other for, I'm just going to say, a year. I know you are going to enjoy hearing her story. Give us a little background on yourself, you know, where you grew up, where you went to school, and just a high level of your career.
Briefly about me, I'm from Florida, moved around a lot growing up, raised by a single mom, and essentially raised myself in a lot of ways, which I think the benefit of that was being able to mature a little bit earlier than others might, but also has pushed me to where I am today, where I have this sort of overly critical lens on things that developed very early. So we can come back to that later on. But I think I had it in my mind that because there were challenges around me, I wanted to control as much as I could about my future. You know, I went to Florida State and left Florida, moved to Chicago right after I graduated. And I was very focused on like what I thought I should be doing, getting a good job, climbing the corporate ladder, making a lot of money, and always doing the right thing. And so I was sort of obsessed with doing what I thought I should be, and pretty quickly started to realize this sort of dichotomy and these two conflicting schools of thought that I was surrounded by, both of which are still driving forces in most decisions we all make on a daily basis. The first is, I believe wholeheartedly in capitalism and the American dream, and theoretically, everyone is provided equal opportunity, theoretically, and that it's up to each individual to take advantage of those opportunities, work hard, and earn the life you want to have. Like, I was an example of this. Nothing was handed to me, and I'm pretty proud of where I've ended up. But on the other hand, I couldn't help but wonder, does our structural system today actually enable and empower people to have said equal opportunity, to grow beyond the circumstances they're born into? Does that pathway really exist? So that sort of fed the second, you know, the other side of the coin, which is, I love finance. I always have. But there was just sort of this insatiable desire to do more. I felt like it was my responsibility to somehow channel my skills and opportunities and success to educate or help others so that they can help themselves and have hopes of a brighter future. I've been sort of in this Jekyll and Hyde situation for quite some time. I always felt like those two things could never coexist, success and feeling good about what I was doing. Mm-hmm. And right around the same time, I was at Northern Trust in the OCIO, basically the asset allocation business, working with family offices. I had a client who was born a billionaire, and she chose to dedicate her life, and not just her wealth, even though it was 100% of her wealth, but I mean, like all of her free time, all of her energy, to making a positive impact on the world. And not only by giving it away to those in need, but also with her investments. From working with this woman who, you know, I'm sure we'll talk more about, and she totally changed my life, it showed me that, hey, with every dollar, you can get both things accomplished. With every minute of my day at work, I was accomplishing both. I was making her more money, and I actually felt really good about it. And it was the first time I'd ever cried in a client meeting. So that was very interesting development in my early 20s. It was just such a game changer. It turned everything I had been trained through CFA and, you know, other avenues on its head. This fire sort of came alive inside of me. I didn't really know what had been missing, but once I felt it, I couldn't ignore it. Personally, since then, have been able to combine those two sides of me, the sort of analytical finance person and this sort of empathetic, altruistic individual. They no longer needed to be separate. Those two forces sort of switched from being at odds to now actually compounding and supporting one another.
So you're actually saying you can make money and do good.
You can. that is my very strong, not only belief, legitimate fact. And actually, once I realized that from working with this one client that I mentioned, I was just convinced that if more people knew what were possible with their wealth, they would want to invest this way. You know, most of my clients, they weren't really concerned about return. They were always thinking about what will happen to this money when I'm gone. What will my legacy be? Have I raised my family well enough? So they were thinking from a values-driven way, and it just I don't think ever really occurred to them that using their wealth for good in an investment capacity was something that they could do. Similarly, it became apparent to me that many of my peers were equally in need of education as the asset owners themselves, which was, you know, as a 20-something female in finance at a conservative investment institution, there was a whole lot to unpack there. And anyone who knows me knows I'm a bit bossy and I don't take no for an answer. And so I saw that as an opportunity to not just accept the norms within our industry, but to take it upon myself to push doors open and educate my peers. You know, they just believed that investing that way must have meant abandoning the profit-driven principles that we had built our careers on. And I saw firsthand that wasn't the case. I essentially set off on an education crusade after Northern and at several organizations since. And my objective since then has been to help families and individuals and the investment community just reimagine what's possible with money. And the way that I personally was able to find both types of satisfaction in life, individuals can too. And I hope to be able to help them see that they can make money while doing it.
So I think it's interesting that the way you started this out, when you start talking about impact, was prefacing it that you believe in capitalism and you believe in personal responsibility. Because, well, one, I 100% agree with that. But I think we can be in this tug of war in the world that we're in, where people either fall on this, it's all personal responsibility, or it's all the systems issue. And what I heard you today, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, it's really both. And you need both of those working in concert versus just one or the other. Is that fair to say what you are articulating?
It's almost like anything in the world, right? If you have a car and your car works and you work on it at home, you can have the fastest, best car. But if there are not stoplights and police officers and social, cultural, and safety norms, having the fastest car is not going to get you anywhere but killed, probably, right? I mean, you have to have a lot of these moving pieces in concert in order for everything to work. And so I think the concept of using one type of capital to solve problems, just it doesn't work and it's quite limiting. And so if you can figure out a way to build a bridge between all of the various parties involved and construct something that allows everyone to contribute, work in concert, like that's the only way you actually get anything done.
My background, I was a psych major. One of my majors was psychology. So I actually came at it more from a personal responsibility side, just because that's, you know, in psychology, you're focused on yourself. I've actually been pushed a little more on the system side and having a greater appreciation for that. However, if I had to choose, I'm still going to put a little more weight on the individual responsibility side, because no matter what system you create, it's never going to be perfect and you still got to be able to learn to adapt. So, but we don't need to go down that path anymore. I do want to ask you one other question before we move on from there, because this is a discussion I was having earlier today, in fact, with somebody else. Is, and when you talked about this billion-dollar client who was, all her energies were going this way. So, you know, in my vernacular, I talk about my time, my talent, and my treasures, trying to align with things that I care about and to make a difference. I'm going to generalize. I feel like most of the world probably agrees with generosity and charity, but that's one bucket. How does this lady, for example, that you work with or other or yourself or others, how do you get them to see that they have two forms of capital? I mean, they got more than that, but you've got this charitable capital, and you got your investment capital, and this investment capital is can be just as catalytic and just important as the nonprofit charity side, let alone then somebody's own efforts. How do you think that lady made that transition, and how have you seen clients make that transition?
Well, I think this client, and actually a lot of clients that I've worked with in the past, probably started, if they've had significant wealth for many decades, right? Like the old school mentality was you make a lot of money to then give a lot of money away.
Yep.
Now to the 25-year-olds getting their MBAs in impact, that concept probably seems so archaic. But up until recently, I mean, even the Gates Foundation operated that way. Investments over here, philanthropy over here, and a very thick wall between. I mean, it doesn't take an overly critical or overly analytical rocket scientist to see you're negating a lot of the good you're doing on one side if you're investing in and enabling bad behavior on the other. And I think for this client in particular, and some of the others who have been impact leaders for many decades, sort of the self-awareness around that was all they needed, was to say, hold on, the thing that's driving me and making me so excited about life, you know, what gets them up in the morning is to make a difference in people's lives in one way, but are they closing their eyes to and being ignorant to a lot of the hurt they might be causing in order to get there with those investments? And so I think for a lot of people, particularly wealth owners, right, there's inheritor's guilt that I think is very prevalent for a lot of the ultra wealthy. It's a lot more of a topic of conversation now where people are realizing actually the source of wealth might have some dirty laundry or heavy baggage tied to it. How can I change that, reinvest it for something good before it's given away? To your point, though, about the individual contribution, that's asking a lot of people.
Yeah.
Because people are more than happy to give their money away, but to look in the mirror and have a frank conversation with themselves or their family about whether they're actions are actually in line with their values is a much, much harder series of conversations to have. And I think that's where the early movers who might have been criticized for being a little like someone yesterday, 2 days ago called me woo-woo, you know, for being
woo-woo.
A little bit too,
okay.
Yeah, woo-woo. So whatever you want to call it, too woke, too emotional, too, you know, pick your descriptor. I think that might have been how those conversations or self-awareness journeys began. But I think for others, once we see Bill Gates and some of the others, you know, some of the most successful investors and philanthropists in the world recognize the oxymoron that exists between the investment side and the philanthropic side, I think it's started to really enable a frank conversation about, are we really living our values then? Or should we try to have these two sides of us be more consistent?
Oftentimes, and this is not universal, but oftentimes philanthropy, charity, and I'm going to just say for more normal folks, is really about a discipline. Whatever the number is, they're going to give $500, they're going to give 2%, 10% away, which is a great discipline. I actually think it's harder on the impact side because you're looking at your own very capital that you're not going to give away. That is what's for your lifestyle, that is for your retirement. And you're actually being open-handed and saying, no, I actually want to align that with my values and risk it for others. Because we forget every investment, we're risking it. But I think that takes real faith to actually put your own comfort and security on the line across more of your assets than just that 5 or 10% or whatever it is. Now, that's not to say that you need charity, and God bless those who do. As somebody who's moved more of my assets to impact, it makes you really, do I really believe in this? If I'm going to take my assets for my family, for my retirement and do this, I will actually tell you by doing it, I've actually experienced joy and freedom by investing this way. One other comment I want to make is, and if you have any thoughts on this, I listen and you have a $1 billion client. Man, I'd love to have a $1 billion client. Or I'd love to be have $1 billion myself in that regard. But what you realize when I...
Hey, me too.
Yeah. What I heard when you said that story, obviously, is what I heard what you said. But I also, it made me go, huh, that lady who's got $1 billion, that $1 billion doesn't bring her happiness. And so she's even trying to find ways to bring joy and meaning and happiness. And so I think it's a great reminder, and we all know this intellectually, but it's a great reminder that those of us who don't have that, just because you get there doesn't mean all of a sudden you're happy and content. In fact, that person is trying to give back. This idea of giving to others service, it's just so powerful. It's where real meaning often comes in.
Spot on. I think it absolutely does. And for her in particular, she actually signed the giving pledge and decided to give 100% of her wealth away. So that is the perfect example of money doesn't buy happiness. Like the single greatest joy in her life was working toward getting rid of it all. Not because she, you know, didn't enjoy it while she had it, but she recognized she didn't need it. You got to work really hard to spend $1.5 billion in a lifetime. And so what brought her joy was finding all of the ways to give it away and seeing how much of an impact she could have, whether it was the $10 million check to one organization or the $50,000 to another, depending on the circumstance, could be life-changing. So that was her source of happiness. And I think something else to keep in mind is something I hear a lot, I'm sure you do too, is, well, I can't really get involved in impact investing or ESG or values-aligned investing or whatever it is, because I don't have the money to do that. You know, I can't give much away. I can't take on that much risk because it's my livelihood. Obviously, it's a totally separate conversation to unpack that because you and I have experienced the fact of the matter is you don't give up return. But either way, you don't even have to have an investable asset base to do this. I think it's important, as you mentioned earlier, time, talent, treasure. Different parts of our lives are rich in different types of capital. You know, you might be in one part of your life where you don't have a ton of financial capital, but you have more time or more skills to offer. That doesn't mean that you shouldn't be living your values. You can just think about using a different type of capital to support them. So if you don't have money to give to an organization, you can volunteer in an area that you are particularly skilled in. I haven't in a while, but for 6 years or so, I did financial literacy training and, you know, tax preparation for some of the low-income communities in Chicago. I didn't have any money to give when I was 23 years old, but I know my way around financial statements. And so there are tons of ways beyond just investment capital or philanthropic capital that people can engage in order to live their values in a holistic way.
At a fairly young age, you've got obviously some great life experience working on the impact side, not only with large clients like this, but then also influencing and educating advisors. You were just recently on a video from a trade organization talking about ESG. And so you've got a voice out there, and yet you're still young. So how would you best describe where you're at in the context of your overall journey?
You know, I've been fortunate enough to have actually spent the majority of my career in this space now, which I think is pretty uncommon. Not that I was the first person in impact, but impact investing wasn't even really a term until 10, 15 years ago. So because of that, I've gone through the full up and down. You know, at the beginning, when I was on my crusade, I had this idea, this vision of what I thought I was striving for and where I thought we could get to. And I wasn't going to take no for an answer until we got there, which I'm sure for anyone who knows me well is not surprised at all. And while I still have that sort of grand moral, you know, set of morals I would love everyone to adhere to or whatever, that is just not reality. And so I'm sort of in the, I'd call it recovering perfectionist mode of recognizing, yes, do I have a vision of where I'd love for us to be now or in 20 years? Absolutely. Changing broad systems and the way that 7 billion people behave and move capital is no small feat. So I'm recognizing that actually perfection is the enemy of progress. Yep. And while it might not be sexy or as satisfying in the moment, certainly, sometimes focusing on really small change at a big scale is equally important, if not more impactful. There are days where I do at times feel more disconnected from the impact I've had in other roles or other stages of my career where I was personally looking someone in the eye and handing them a check or making their lives at least in some way better in that moment. But recognizing that if I put energy into educating and empowering others, they can then do that 10, 15, 20 fold. So all of that is to say, I feel like I'm kind of in phase two. In phase two of my impact career in particular, because I've sat on all sides of the table now, and I'm currently trying to think about, you know, going back to the bridge comment earlier, how can I build a bridge between all of these different communities and experiences that I've had? And how can we all work together to improve things, even if just a tiny bit?
Well, I'm not going to go into a ton of detail because of securities laws, but something just hit me based on some things you had said earlier to me. So I'm going to make a prediction that given where you're at your firm and what you're doing is right where you should be. And I actually think that role that you're in around impact and the opportunity just in your own firm's footprint will have a significant, I shouldn't use this word again, but will have a significant impact on the success of your firm. And I actually think that it'll be also something for other firms to look for and shoot for. So I don't know if you can read between the lines on that, but it's fun to see where you're at today. And I, as somebody who's known you for a little while, not a long time, you're absolutely in the right seat. This is a very pointed question, and you can answer it from an impact perspective. You can just answer it however you want. How are you trying to change the world?
Well, there are a lot of ways I would love to, but my biggest objective, and I've used this analogy a million times, I should probably come up with a better one, is being a bridge builder. I do not have the solution to all problems, but what I can do is find the people who do and translate the communication between them. There is a significant gap between investors' desire for positive change and their ability to actually mobilize capital to support that. So to the extent that I can build that bridge and make it easier for people who genuinely want to do the right thing and want to do good in the world, like it should not be difficult to do that if they want to. It's one thing if people said that they didn't want to do good in the world and they don't care about other people. That's just not the case. The fact of the matter is every single person wants to make money and do the right thing. So they should be able to do it. And all it takes, from my perspective, is to build that bridge. And I'm thinking about that from two perspectives. The first is just raising the moral floor, so to speak, across the board. As I've alluded to, I'm quite bossy and I don't take no for an answer. So I continue to try to challenge the status quo in the broader investment ecosystem and really try to push the investment industry, us, our peers, hold ourselves to a higher standard and use our power for good. And if not good, at least neutrality. That's one piece. And then the second is to actually create a values aligned experience for all investors. Individuals should not always be at this moral crossroads of, do I feed my family or feel good about myself and do what I think is the right thing? Those should always be able to be one. And if you can really understand what drives people and how they personally get joy out of life, you can find a way to make money doing that. And so to the extent that the investment ecosystem has a high moral floor and individuals are able to engage in the financial systems in a more personal and values-oriented way, if that happens, I have changed the world 10 times more than I ever hoped to.
But you're out there, you're a voice for that. And even when I heard you talk, I mean, even if we can get people talking about non-financial metrics with financial metrics, that's a win. I mean, because right now, capitalism predominantly is about the bottom line. And just even introducing other variables in discussion, it forces creativity and innovation to go, oh, wait, we're trying to solve other things than just financial. This is what I'm really interested to hear, and maybe you've already given some clue to your answer, but when did you realize the power of capital and what does that mean to you?
Capital has been a part of my whole career, but really where its true power came to light for me was, yes, this is probably 3.5-ish years ago or so, right around the beginning of COVID. So shortly before COVID, my husband and I quit our jobs, put everything in storage and went on a sabbatical. For two people in finance, that was finance in the US. That is not something you see every day, but it was really important to me just personally. I've always wanted to travel and see the world and experience other cultures and other people. But then professionally, I had been an impact for quite some time now, and I had never gotten my hands dirty. You know, I volunteered and I visited affordable housing properties in the US, but not quite the same when you drive there in your nice Uber. So I really wanted to go be boots on the ground, so to speak. Anyway, so we went on the sabbatical. I am a total planner, planned for every possible scenario, did not expect COVID or any global pandemic. Even before the pandemic, just spending time in these small villages, we are mostly in Southeast Asia, I was blown away by the humility and generosity of these people that we encountered. Many of them had nothing. I mean, we were in a lot of villages with no running water, incomplete meals, lack of transportation, illiteracy, I mean, you name it. And yet they were happy and opened their doors to us, shared their meals with us and their stories. And so that in and of itself, while not capital related, was just mind blowing. And then we happened to be in this area when COVID hit. And I'm sure you had a similar experience. Like, it took us all a while in the Western world to really understand the gravity of COVID from a health perspective, economic, you know, you name it. But these other folks were hit with it immediately and a million times harder, whether that was from a health perspective or financial perspective. And that was really, I think, what was so shocking to me and upsetting to me is we all typically have a little bit of reserve to fall back on if we lose our jobs or we have a home to stay in if there's a lockdown. And a lot of these places, they might not have even had a safe home to be in to begin with. In these communities, their entire way of life, ability to feed their families was solely dependent on tourism or something that was now all of a sudden gone completely. Again, even before COVID, we saw that every dollar really does have an impact. You know, we would choose to stay in a small family-run bed and breakfast over a big hotel. And I think those kinds of experiences we have regularly now as a society more. But that was amplified so significantly during COVID, where every single dollar, we stayed traveling for a couple months during COVID, and every single decision and every dollar that we spent, whether it was at the grocery store or roadside stand, that dollar immediately went to go feed their families. Mm-hmm. And recognizing the gravity of that is actually kind of scary at times, to recognize that you have the ability with every decision and with every dollar to positively or negatively influence someone's life or outcome. It can be a lot, but I think it also presented a really big opportunity, because I think it's so easy for us in the Western world to sort of think, again, I don't have enough money for it to matter, or I'm just one person, I can't do much. And being in these villages where, you know, certain people live on $3 a day, most people have $3 a day to potentially change someone's life. The big takeaway for me was every dollar has an impact, positive or negative. So, you know, a lot of people say like, oh, well, this isn't an impact investment. Well, yeah, it is. Every investment is an impact investment. Right. It could be a negative impact investment,
yeah,
but every dollar matters. That is the power of capital.
Pre-COVID, if you and I would go to a group of advisors or even non-advisors and said, hey, you can invest in a company in America that's producing more jobs, or you can go to India or Southeast China or whatever, whatever you want to say. The notion was outside the U.S. to have a job is more impactful than inside. And I think COVID actually woke us all up that having jobs is a gift, whether you're in Africa or whether you're in the U.S. And so I think one thing that I saw it do was open up even in America to go, oh, yeah. I mean, even to have a great company that cares about its people, that pays well, it's like, that's an impact. And that's not what I would have heard 5 years ago. It'd be like, that's not really impact.
100%. It was wild because, you know, we came back to the same neighborhood in Chicago that we lived in before we left for travel. And we only ended up being gone for about 8.5, 9 months, again, because of COVID. We eventually had to come back because we were on lockdown, not able to experience other people and other cultures. So, you know, that kind of defeated the purpose. Right. I mean, we live in probably the most developed, what I would consider the most insulated neighborhood in Chicago, you would think, from COVID. And I remember so distinctly being in the Uber coming back from the airport. And we drove past our favorite little restaurant, our favorite corner boutique, the cheesemonger that we loved for 5-6 years. And they were closed. And of course, we had seen a lot of this, you know, on the news, and we had spoken to friends. It actually just gave me goosebumps. But I remember being in the Uber, being stunned that in just 2 months, because this was mid-May, in just 2 months, our neighborhood had had very tangible negative impacts already. And it was extremely sobering. To your point, we saw it and felt it daily when we were in Thailand at this point. But it never really hit me that that same series of themes would have made its way all the way back to Lincoln Park in Chicago.
Yeah, it also shows you the value of work and really the gift of work and the dignity that even work brings. I mean, I don't know the stats on this, but you know, I've heard it a number of times, how many people in America are, you know, not happy at their job. And I bet you COVID changed that. I mean, I don't know that it fixed it, but I bet you there's much more gratitude to go, you know what? I'm grateful that I have a job. So, all right.
Well, wait, hold on. So to that point, there's one quick thing I want to mention. I love that you just said that there's dignity in work, right? And so that in and of itself, I think, is a very important point and concept to make the case for impact investing. There's only so many dollars that can be given away, right? Like grant capital.
Yep.
Philanthropic capital is finite. Yep. Once it's gone, it's gone. And it's necessary because people have to eat. There are natural disasters. Like, there are times where you just need to write a check to someone because they need it in that moment. But that is not solving a long-term problem. And frankly, like, I know when I've been the recipient of handouts, it doesn't feel great all the time. And I hate to use this example, but sort of the like teach a man to fish kind of thing. I think that we saw during COVID was very real. We saw the desire for people to work because it, you know, no one wants to go to wake up early and go to work every day. But when you can't, you all of a sudden realize that you want to. You want the routine, you want the dignity, you want the intellectual stimulation, you want the relationships, you want the skills, you want to stay sharp. You know, I found myself doing crossword, like I'm obsessed with crosswords, but I was maxing out the New York Times subscription because you want to have a set of skills and be rewarded for it. And that's what an investment is meant to do.
So you know my passion for investing in, well, just general, my passion for men and women who are in or have been in the criminal justice system. And so one of the things that we do is we try to invest in businesses that are either run by or hire formerly incarcerated men and women. I talk to a certain population group, and they think, well, you're using these people. And you're like, whoa, wait a second. Well, first of all, you could in theory, but I hope I'm not. Well, I'm not, because I'm not even the one running them. I'm just investing in them. But it's the other side. It's what you just said. These men and women I know, because I've invested in and I've talked to them. If I came in and said, I believe in you, I believe in your business. I believe that you're going to make money for yourself. I believe you're going to provide a value to somebody else, and you're going to help me. The dignity that brings that individual is so much greater than, oh, here's 20 bucks. Now, some people need that 20 bucks, and there's a place for that. Right. But I've had to fight that more than I would have guessed, where it's like, you're using these people. Like, no, I'm not. We're helping them. We're giving them dignity. If you could have a big dream come true for your life, what would that be?
Well, I would really like for Florida State to win another national championship, but that's implied.
Okay.
So beyond that, I think in general, I would like to leave the world a better place than when I entered. We're not necessarily there yet, because I think the last 30 something years, we've had a lot of ups and downs. And so frankly, I don't know if we're better off than we were, but I think we're headed in the right direction. And so specifically, I think the way I think about like measuring success, like what would a dream come true look like other than sitting on the beach with a pina colada at 40, would be to work myself out of a job pretty quickly. Like, I do not want impact investing to be a term ever again at some point. You know, I used to say 20 years, I'm really shooting for 10 at this point. It should just be how we think and how we operate. I will have done my job, and the world will have become a quote unquote better place if we are being we, the general population, are being very intentional about the decisions we make, whether that's where we park our cash, to the kinds of businesses that we frequent, to the relationships that we have. You know, to the extent that intentionality becomes inherent, and then impact investing is not a job, and you and I retire early, that's about as good as it gets.
I love it. I love it. When I hear you say that in its simplistic form, and it's just very simplistic, I hear, well, intentionality is definitely the key word, but I also heard bringing your heart and head to the table in the investing space. It cannot just all and by the way, it can't all just be head, and it isn't all just head. It's just that people are afraid to fully admit that their heart is in it until you, or your values are in it, but it's in it whether you know it or not. So you might as well just acknowledge it. So,
well, so that piece I think is really important, because, and this isn't a criticism of conscious capitalism in the term or the movement, but just the concept of being conscious of something to me means recognizing it's there, knowing, acknowledging it, knowing it. And my hope is that we take that one step farther. So we not only are conscious of those who are impacted by our decisions, but we then use that consciousness to be intentional about the decisions that we make. And so what that might mean is your behavior might not change at all. You might become aware of something, be conscious about it, and still make the same decision or the same investment. That's okay with me, as long as it was intentional. But I think the world that we've been living in, you know, the non-billionaires who don't have a family office investment team, no one knows what their 401k is invested in. Right. No one's ever thought to ask.
Right.
Right. And so it's little things like that, just asking and just learning, even if you say, oh, actually, I'm okay with whatever I own. That is a step in the right direction, but it's being conscious and aware, and then using that to inform intentional decisions. And I like to believe that if those are the only requirements, it will guaranteed lead us to a place where we are making more thoughtful decisions.
Well, if you think about it, and I don't want to be harsh on the industry that we're in, because I think the financial service industry has done wonderful things, but the way that planning and all that stuff is done, yeah, they bring in values and that kind of stuff, but more about, you know, your legacy and how you're going to use your capital in. We've really skipped over how that capital is being used between now and your end goal. And so even the products and things and wrappers that have been created, what do I own? An index, S&P 500. Well, most people don't even know what's in the S&P 500. Now you can go look at it. Whereas if you went out and, I invested in 15 affordable housing, like, what that is. So my belief is, and there's real financial reasons why I say this, or investment trends why I say this, but I also think there's psychological. I think we're going to see a resurgence in knowing what you're investing in versus just even indexing, as an example, for multiple reasons. It's not just one simple thing. But I will say, it is a privilege when you think about it, that an investor today, for as little as you pick the number, $5, $10, $15, $20, can actually have some of their capital working for them by investing in X, Y, and Z company. That's pretty cool. And we take it for granted, but how many countries, how many civilizations, would have loved to have the ability to do that. And yet we take it for granted. It's if you sit and think about it, it's mind-boggling that you and I, with $10,000, all the things that we could be a part of and participate in some form or fashion, is pretty cool.
It's not even just investments. Obviously, investments are a huge piece of it, and sure, that's what we do for a living. But let's say, going back to that $10,000 example, maybe you invest most of it, but you have to buy food and clothes, right, with some of the other. Even being intentional about how you spend that capital, the kinds of stores that you go to, the organizations you engage with, where you go on vacation, how you spend your time. Just the concept of being intentional and choosing the small local B&B or boutique over the Amazon or the Marriott, you might still make the same decision, and that's okay. But being thoughtful about the way you're spending your various forms of capital instead of the easy thing or the default thing, I think, like I said, I truly believe that everyone wants to make money, but everyone wants to do the right thing. I think for most humans, it's programmed into us. And so if we can make it easy to understand the decisions you're making and make it easy for you to do the right thing if you want to, I believe that people will.
Well, I very much appreciate your insights and your time. I know that you have thought through a lot of these issues. One of the reasons why I love chatting with you, I know you ponder this stuff and mm-hmm. probably to your perfectionist point of view, ad nauseum, but I know you care. So I thank you for coming on and sharing with us.
I am very appreciative of our relationship in general. I've really enjoyed being able to have these kinds of conversations with you on a very regular basis. And so mm-hmm. if anyone has made it to this point in the podcast, now you get a tiny insight into how Jeff and I spend our time. But I really appreciate the role also that you're playing in the ecosystem by trying to spread awareness and have different kinds of conversations. Not every person in our industry has the same point of view or the same definition of success or, whatever it is. And so I think this is exactly what we need, to have these forums, to have these kinds of conversations. And again, someone might listen to this and disagree with everything I've said, but at least they've heard it and they have an opinion, and that is moving in the right direction. So I'm very grateful for you having me, and I still have a little bit of a cough, but I at least have my voice back. So thank you for rescheduling twice so that I can actually speak.
Well, for those who are still listening, don't forget to subscribe to A New Lens with Common Good Capital on your podcast app of choice. And please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and Spotify. Until next time, this is Jeff Schaefer. This podcast is a production of Common Good Capital and does not constitute an offer or a solicitation of an offer. Such offer would only be made through a private placement memorandum. Prospective investors in private placement securities should be aware that making an investment is speculative and involves a high degree of risk, including the risk of losing all or a portion of an investment. Investments of this nature are illiquid and subject to substantial restrictions upon transferability.